The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another week of K4 Wins. That's K, the number 4wins.com. Why do we call it that? Because we have the four Ks. I'm Tony Curry. We have Kai Gregory. We have, of course, Kip Kiefer. And we have Case Kiefer down there. Let's go around the horn real quick. Case Kiefer, of course, executive director, chief editor for the Las Vegas Sun. He's down there, ground zero out in Las Vegas. His dear old pop has been doing the business longer than he has. Kip, and of course, I do a TV show with Kip of the starting lineup every Saturday morning from 8:30 to, it's from 10:30 to 11:30. We should be on from like 8:30 to 11 o'clock, but it's from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. We're that good. And of course, he's been super hot on his SEC plays. We'll get into that. Kai Gregory, he's been doing this for now 40 years, playing both sides of the street for a long period of time as a book and, of course, a handicapper. And I've been doing ESPN and sports radio for a long period of time. Before we move in, we got a lot to get into. We got hockey, Major League Baseball, maybe some futures looking in, and also some big time questions coming in from an actual viewer or listener for Case Kiefer. But first, how do we do last weekend, Kai?
Last week total was 21-11. This month, we're 88-47 this month. A lot of those because of Cuckoo down there and some of his hot nights, including I think a 7-1 two or three nights ago from him. And year to date, we are 206-96-3.
Nice, wrong.
Which is pretty good. I mean, unless we lose like 40 games tonight, we're going to have January and February as a good month.
Well, let's only make 39 picks.
Yeah, let's not. K4wins.com, K4wins.com. Again, it's a free website. Go there and subscribe. You get the best plays we got, and we're getting ready for March Madness coming up here. Of course, Election Sunday coming up in just a couple of weeks on the 16th. And we also have, of course, the SEC basketball tournament. We'll talk about that in just a few seconds. But then awesome. A question here from Philip in Birmingham said he just found the show. Absolutely loves the show. It's actually a guy I go to church with. Us Catholics like to drink and gamble. We just don't tell anybody about it. We don't call it sex. We just call it dancing really tight. That's what we call it. So this for Case, though, what's the biggest and best Case scenario betting baseball and or hockey? Since we're talking about just picking a winner, do you find it easier to bet on one than the other? We got Major League Baseball season kicking off the 18th and 19th from Tokyo, the Dodgers and the Cubs. Then, of course, we'll be off by 8 or 9 days, and then Major League Baseball season starts here. So we're going to be all over. Do you find it easier to bet, despite the fact you're just picking the winner, baseball and or hockey?
I mean, very similar, because both money line sports. So my approach, I'd say, is really, really kind of mirrors each other, because you're trying to make the money line. You're just basically trying to get the percent of each team winning. I would say, especially the last 2 years, I don't know, I've just not to pat myself on the back or anything, but I've crushed baseball the last couple of years. And I think it's a little bit easier in that there's just so many games that I know there's different philosophies. If you ask different bettors, they'll say different things. I think most people would say, oh, I only like to play two or three games a day. That's not what works for me. I feel like I have an edge, and anyone that has an edge, it's very small. I mean, the market's smart. So to me, I like to compound my edge and bet as many plays as possible. Obviously, baseball, there's 15 games a day. Hockey, on a busy day, there can be 15, but that's like the busiest day of the year. So for me, I like to get more bets down. So for me, it's baseball, and I'll say especially probably this season, because I think I'm up a few units hockey wise this year, but hockey just, it hasn't been the financial windfall that it has been the last few years, and that'll happen. I mean, you have losing weeks, years, seasons, and everything, but I'll say hockey had gone super well for me, especially last year. I think it was my best hockey year ever. This year, I'm not near on that level. I have a lot of future stuff that'll play into that, but I would certainly say baseball. But I think the biggest reason, that the approach is the same to the two for me, the biggest reason is just so many games and more ways to get down, and I feel like it, you know, the way I do things, more volume is better.
He also asked, is there a favorite too big to play? I think a lot of people always look at that 200 number and say, listen, I'm not betting anything near 200 either side. And also, when you're talking about parlays and you really wanted to close something up, I know, Kip, you just got back from horse racing, and I know you, when you're doing a pick four or something like that, you're usually going to throw in a race or two where you're taking the heavy favorite because it's supposed to win, it's supposed to be an easy win for you. Is there a number too big for you?
No, I get it. When I was doing this, and I totally understand, if you're doing it recreationally, you got to kind of know why you're what you're doing. If you're doing it for fun, or you're doing it, you don't want to lose a lot, then yeah, I understand. And when I was, you know, younger, before I had built up a bankroll, I probably was this way. But, you know, probably the sharpest bettor in the world that I know, the guy I talked to, like, he'll lay like 2.5 million to win 10,000. If the odds are right. I mean, to me, this is just, if you haven't noticed from watching our show, this is just straight a numbers game, a math game to me. So if I make a team 95% to win and the betting market has them, minus 400, that's nowhere near 95%. Like, I don't mind laying a huge price. I mean, obviously, I'm not intimating I'm doing it at the absolute highest level of some of these guys like I just mentioned. But I think, if you stick with this, you find what you're good at, you find those edges I talked about, if you're able to build a bankroll, you'll get more comfortable with laying those big prices just with the confidence that you know you're getting the best.
So you have a percentage chance to win and then a correlation that goes along with the price line. So you can tell
me. That if we really boil this all down, I mean, that's really all sports betting is. Even the point spreads, all you can plug them into a calculator. I know people don't like doing the math themselves, but that's all this really is, you know, you're buying and selling probability of a team winning. So especially the money lines, I mean, it's easy to do. All the money lines correlate to the percentage of a team winning, and to me, if my percentage is better than the sports books, then I'm gonna bet it.
All right, SEC basketball tournament, Kai, coming up here, and as of right now, it is Auburn, it is Duke, and it is everyone else for that number 2 and 3 spot, or if you were a 3 or 4 spot, depending on how you look at it. When you talk about number 1 seeds, you can certainly make an argument for Alabama, although they've had a couple losses, Tennessee and Florida and Houston, all of a sudden coming out of nowhere with victories over Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Arizona over the past week. Give me your final four. What's the final four going to look like on the 16th?
No clue. I think there's quite a few teams that can win. I like Auburn. It's going to be interesting because I think there's a lot of matchups where you can see 2s, 3s, and maybe even 6s that in these seeds that can come in and win. Duke has I've kind of changed courses on Duke. I thought Duke was probably the most overrated team in the country for a long time. I've really paid attention and watched their last 8 games. Their offense, they're playing better. It's not just Cooper Flagg. There are other players that can do some things. And he has really gotten a lot better since the beginning of the year where, 2 straight games, he turned the ball over late in the game that cost them, and one of them could have cost them, didn't. I know Case and I kind of disagree on the coaching here, but what Kelvin Sampson is doing at Houston, and now that they have an offense, I think, and did we not disagree? I thought you didn't like him.
No, I love Houston, and I'm a big Kelvin Sampson guy. Definitely.
Okay. All right. My bad. So I'm really high on Kelvin Sampson. I think Bruce Pearl is a very good coach. We agree. We disagree on Nick Oates. That's right. Nate Oates. Sorry. I don't want to be like the legend and call DeBoer Kevin like he did once he got mad at him and has all year. But there's some teams. I mean, even if you look at this SEC matchup with what we have and what's going on the rest of the year, there's going to be some movement. I mean, Auburn has to play Kentucky, Texas A&M, and Alabama. Alabama has to play Tennessee, Florida, and Auburn. Those are those games. I mean, those teams could go 3-0, but they could go 1-2 and change some things up there. And then Florida's number 3 there. And then you've got number 5 and number 6, Tennessee and Alabama playing this weekend in a game that, even as a Tennessee fan, it hurts me to say, Tennessee's defense is very good. I don't think their offense can keep up with the Alabama team that we've seen for the last 2 weeks.
Kip, look in your crystal ball. We got some monster ball games as part of your marquee monster matchups on the SEC marquee matchup list you had there. And, of course, the starting lineup, Auburn and Kentucky. Kentucky is, of course, playing for that 3 seed. If they knock off Auburn, which, of course, they have not lost there at Rupp Arena since 1988, Auburn is solidified. They're done. They're so far ahead of everyone else as far as at a 1 seed with 2 losses. You got Alabama at Tennessee. You can make an argument. Tennessee's playing for a 1 seed. A&M in Florida, of course, Florida also playing for that 1 seed. And you also had Georgia and Texas in there a little bit, but what's your 4 number 1 seeds right now when they come out on the 16th? What do you believe it's going to look like?
I don't think it's going to vary a whole lot from some of the projections we've seen in the last week or two. The thing about the committee, you could have somebody else win the SEC tournament and they're still going to put Auburn as a 1 seed. Sure. Joe Lunardi said as much the other day that Auburn would have to completely just fall apart the last 2 weeks of the year. They're that far ahead of everybody right now in all the numbers and all of the measuring devices used to determine that. So Auburn almost certainly is going to be on one line. I don't see anybody. I think Clemson and Louisville are the only teams in the ACC that could actually threaten Duke. So I think Duke's going to be one of the four almost certainly. And I also look for, and this will be a situation more to me in the regular season, a little bit in the tournament, but the committee just typically doesn't even pay attention to conference tournaments in recent years, in my opinion. I think it's going to be more what Kai just mentioned, the schedules being left. Who's going to perform the best down the stretch on the regular season? And I think there's a real good chance for one seed between the trio of Alabama, Tennessee, Florida. Whoever finishes the strongest, I think, is going to get one of those. And probably Houston would be my fourth. Although I kind of suspect that I think the Big East is being a little bit overlooked. Mm. They've got a lot of teams that can be a real pain in the butt in this tournament. I like teams like St. John's and even Villanova, who's always tournament tested. I think the Big East is going to be a big factor in the whole mix, too.
Speaking of St. John's, a little Tony Curry trivia here. Rick Pitino, of course, the first coach ever to win 5 regular season championships with 5 different teams. Kai, name me the 5 wow. teams that Rick Pitino has taken to a championship in the regular season.
Providence, Kentucky, Louisville. Oh, God.
Providence wasn't one of them. St. John's, Louisville, Kentucky. You got 2 other ones.
Iona,
yes, and his first team. He left him to go to the pros.
The real small school.
Boston U.
Okay. Providence with him.
I would have guessed Providence. I would have guessed Providence.
Those 5 teams he took, of course, to regular season championships. And the crazy thing is, you can look at his career 3 different times. He left college to go to the pros, and then came back to college again. He's 74 years old. Pretty amazing stuff that Rick Pitino's done. Of course, he's got the St. John Red Storm. They are on fire, and I think they've only lost like 4 games all season long. So they're going to be up.
A Tony Curry useless stat for you also. Who's the winningest active coach in college basketball right now?
Hmm.
I'd have to say Rick Pitino.
Is it Izzo?
No.
Who you got? 3.
Rick Barnes.
Is it really?
I was thinking, and I thought, no way. I swear that was in my head.
That's unbelievable. Wow. That's incredible.
Dude, he's been around a long time.
The only reason I know it is I was watching the game the other night, and they talked about it. But, I mean,
that game
this weekend, you talk about it. I mean, let's look. When you go to the bench, Tennessee has 9 scholarship athletes. So if you get into real analysis on that, if Sears goes down for Alabama, you have somebody to come in. If Ziegler goes down for Tennessee, the drop-off is tremendous. Then you're going to have somebody like Ganey running the point, or Mayshak, who I love as a defensive player, but he sucks on offense. I mean, he does. So I really believe, depending on how the officiating goes, I think Alabama might come in there and win by 10.
That's an amazing stat. And thank you for sharing that Tony Curry stat. I love that. I'm going to use that somewhere in my deployment next season or next weekend. Tony, for sure.
Can I ask a question real quick of our fellow experts here? Guys, I am absolutely just scratching my head every week because I really haven't followed until we started doing this show as much online. What in the – Carrie and Kai, you both probably have an answer to this question, but why here sitting on Friday morning recording this program do we not have SEC lines for Saturday? SEC teams do not play on Thursdays or Fridays. What is the reason that they can't put a number out on Thursday or Friday morning on these games? I just don't understand it.
I'll chime in and say
they will abuse it.
Yeah, well, probably. And you got to talk about 300 basketball teams. It's not like they have to put any more extra lines out 2 days before.
But either. I mean, I understand if teams play on Thursday, that's even kind of close. But I mean, the SEC never plays a Thursday or Friday.
It's a lot that can happen between Thursday and Saturday. Period. I mean, there's like, a lot like that can happen. I mean, you can talk about injuries. First of all, you're talking about college kids. A lot can change. I don't know, Case. What do you think?
I will say, first of all, I think Kai's right. I would not putting myself in that category, but I mean, you know, the way the industry's gone, and this is a weird example because they've never posted basketball lines early, but I mean, no one wants to stick their neck out and have it be willing to chop to be chopped off by posting a bad number. I will give FanDuel a little bit of credit. I mean, they have some numbers up now. We don't have FanDuel in Nevada, so it doesn't really do anything for me, but they're usually the earliest to post it. And I think the other thing from talking to sportsbooks guys is just, you know, in football season, there's a rush to get them out because football, I mean, just nothing compares to football. There's people are wanting to bet them super early.
On Monday.
They are, you know, it makes financial sense to get them up because they're going to take bets right away. Basketball is just really, I mean, people like to bet 10 minutes before game time, which is just donating your money, in my opinion. But, you know, to put them up that early, it's a big, I think it's probably more of an undertaking than you think to get the right number, to make sure that, you know, you feel protected from guys that, you know, are probably more up to date with you and might have better metrics than you. So then you're going to rush out and try to put all these numbers up. The only people who are going to bet them are guys that know what's going on. You're not going to get any public action. That's just not the way people bet basketball. So I think at least the guys, you know, I've talked to or heard about the industry from this, it's just, it's not worth the, it's not worth the hustle when there's really no reward.
Answer is why doesn't UAB play Alabama in football? It's because Alabama doesn't have to. Vegas doesn't have to put the numbers up. They don't need to. I don't know if they'd be making any more money to put the numbers up early, unless of course it was for 4K wins. Maybe you've been out there in Las Vegas enough, Kip. Why don't the two of you go hit some guys up, tell them to put some early numbers up. And of course, if you got guys like Case can tell us right now. Case, we're telling me right now, what is going to be the line this weekend on Auburn, Kentucky, at Kentucky. Kentucky for 17th the country, Auburn number one. He'll tell you what the line's going to be. What's it going to be?
I have Auburn four. So okay.
Auburn four.
We'll see. That might be one FanDuel's posted too, by the way. I'll type that in right here.
Give me Alabama at Tennessee, which should be a very interesting ball game.
Auburn 5.5 at FanDuel right now. Tennessee, I made 4, which I know Kyle disagree with. 3.5 at FanDuel right now.
Okay. And then let's go ahead and do the
other. I don't disagree with it. I would just bet Alabama.
Okay.
I mean, that's a game that I'm going to bet Alabama or I'm going to pass it. And then as a Tennessee fan, I hope I lose money.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I mean, Alabama just had a weird week. I don't, you know, you look at that and you're like, I'm getting Alabama a one seed, you know, plus 4 points as a layman, as a person coming in and not knowing my numbers. I'm going, wait a minute, they're number two or number three in the country and they're catching points at Tennessee. What? There's a reason why it's that line. The other game I thought was huge too, A&M at Florida. What are you seeing on that as far as the line goes?
Let's see. Where's that one? I made it Florida 9.5.
Wow.
This one actually not up yet. I don't know if it, I mean, some maybe Texas A&M falling a little bit. I think FanDuel, it looks, only has a handful of games up, and this is not one they posted a line on. But I had a Florida 9.5.
And before we get into some of our plays, too, one of the games we talked about last week was that Houston-Iowa State game. Both teams obviously playing really well. Iowa State without their two leading scorers, and we saw that line go from, what was it, 6 to 12 or whatever it was, and I just thought that was too many points, and they ended up getting inside that number, although in the first half it looked like they were going to win by 40. When you take out some of your big guys, your big players, and you are as deep as, say, a Houston, how much did that line move? And are those games, Case, that you really find a lot of value in, or do you usually leave it alone?
One that's like that severe, I actually ended up leaving it alone. Of course, I wanted to bet Iowa State. I said it on the show, and I could show you my log here. I still have ISU question marks. I thought it went a little crazy, and they did end up covering. But it's kind of an inexact science, especially like a crazy scenario like that. I think we talked on the show last week, and I had Houston like a 7-point favorite. That was assuming they're both at full health. The one big guy for Iowa State, Milan, if I can't pronounce his last name, they thought he might come back that game. He was ruled out. And then right after that, their top two scorers, Curtis Jones and Keyshawn Gilbert, Vegas local, by the way, former UNLV player, they were both ruled out. So then, you know, you kind of got to decide, okay, how much is it worth that they're missing three of their probably six best players, their two leading scorers? Obviously, I think the market got as high as 12.5, so they ended up saying it was worth like 5.5 points. I thought that was kind of fair, so I ultimately left it alone. But I think that's the way you have to – I know I've used this phrase before, but I think that's the way you have to think about it. You kind of just have to quantify your opinions. I mean, even if you don't have like hard data in front of you and are getting an exact number, just think in your head, like, well, what do I think Curtis Jones and Keyshawn Gilbert are worth to Iowa State? And in that scenario, I thought 5.5 was kind of fair. I mean, Houston, Iowa State, it's not going to be like a super high paced, a million possession games. Like maybe it's different if they were playing Alabama and, you know, they're going to be getting up and down the court a million times. So it seemed fair to me. Iowa State had a really inspired effort and covered the number. I did. I know past posting here, Thomas Larry, but I did bet against them the next game when they played Oklahoma State. Because I think Jones came back, was still kind of hobbled. Gilbert didn't come back. This is just anecdotal, but I see this a lot. I see a lot when like your big number one guy's out. A lot of times teams overperform in that first game. Everyone steps up. I think there's like a bigger dip the second game when you're that beaten up, especially that was a back-to-back road game and Oklahoma State just worked them. So I did end up taking advantage of the injury situation. Unfortunately, didn't cash on Iowa State Houston, but the next night came back with Oklahoma State and that worked out well.
And Kip, you brought up a very interesting point. K4wins.com. You just brought up a very interesting point. When they have Selection Sunday, we have championship games going on that Sunday afternoon.
They don't pay any attention to them.
Exactly. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, how can you actually be picking the board? So they got all the numbers. Normally, championships don't mean squat as far as in seeding, unless, of course, you're talking about a team that is 13-18, comes out of the woodworks and wins four games in 4 days and ends up getting an automatic bid. But I mean, I you know, it's weird because I'm not sure. I know it's all about money, but the regular season championship to me means so much more than that conference championship they have. And I understand why we do it, and I'm glad we have it. It's a lot of fun, but it certainly doesn't mean a hill of beans to the committee, does it?
No, it's a fundraiser for the conferences. It's, you know, cut down the nets and, okay, we're the conference champions. But you guys know for a fact what I know, that a lot of coaches go into that. It's just aggravating to even have to go participate in that conference tournament, which is a giant pain in the ass. You sit around for 4 or 5 days if you make it all the way to Sunday. And a lot of coaches, I am absolutely convinced Calipari used to do that with the really good Kentucky teams. Look, let's just go, let's make a good effort in this first game. But if they lost, he was thrilled because they could go back home and get ready for the tournament that mattered. And I think a lot of coaches kind of have that mentality, which, I like the whole spectacle of the conference championship, but in this day and age, it's winning the big ring is the only thing that really matters.
One more email question, then we're going to get some plays from you guys. Depending on when you're listening to this show, of course, we're going to be going live on the Coastal Sports Network coming up here in the next few weeks. But in the meantime, you can check us on a podcast. We're available on every major industry, and this show runs, by the way, I'm running it every Saturday morning from 6 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock in the morning, back to back to back to back to back. So if you miss any of the shows, you're going to catch it. Make sure you listen to it on Tony Curry Radio. We do that every Saturday morning. It's all K4 Wins on TKR every Saturday morning. Levon in Hueytown, I guess this would be for Case. How important are spring training games in Major League Baseball based on futures? Case, if you have a team coming in and you're like, what the hell is going on? You think they're going to suck. Next thing you know, they win 16 games in preseason. Does it mean anything? Or what can you tell about preseason baseball games and what a team will do during a baseball season?
I don't really pay attention, to be honest. So to me, I would say it doesn't mean much. I will say there's been some research kind of interesting to the contrary the last few years, especially not Major League Baseball, but NBA, there's actually been a really strong correlation where the teams that overperform in the preseason are like flying over like their win totals, and there's been a strong correlation to how they play in the NBA. So I think if you asked me 2 years ago, I would say I put absolutely no stock into it. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, now I'll at least look at the standings and say, oh, that's interesting, and maybe dig in if there's a team that I think overperforms. So I would go from saying nothing to very little now. I don't really pay attention to spring training. I know there's some guys this time of year where talk about guys taking advantage of sports books on things they don't have to post. I mean, there's a whole cottage industry of people just waiting for lineups to get posted and just fire as much as they can on spring training. Never been my thing, but I think it's worth looking at and investigating, but ultimately not a major factor for me.
Keep those emails coming. Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick, Tony, because in spring training baseball, the road team, you never know who they're going to put on the bus. Like Case just said, it so much depends on, let's say a team is based in Fort Myers and they have to go up to just pick a spot, Orlando, to play a game on the road. Maybe they might say, yeah, you guys take tomorrow off and play golf, and they might just bring a bunch of zeros up there. So that is an interesting angle. I laugh thinking about it's a cottage industry because it makes perfect sense. Because the home team usually is going to play the regular guys because they're already there. But the road team, I would bet the home teams in spring training a lot if I was going to do that.
Is that true? I mean, because you're talking teams that are playing at home, but they're not really at home. I mean, it's grapefruit and
all cactus of them are based right? there. If you go to the Braves new complex in Sarasota, they have all the housing. I mean, it's not even, you're not even off.
They are so much, they're so much nicer over the last 5 or 10 years. Oh, no doubt. They used to be dumps. I mean, I used to go to Clearwater
and stuff.
These
new spring training places are just awesome.
They're almost as nice.
The Braves just blew me away.
They're almost as nice as their regular season stadiums. They really are.
I mean, these guys just stroll out of their apartment and could walk right in the stadium. I mean, everything is right there. So that's what I mean. The team playing at home, you've got all your assets right there where, you know, they don't make everybody go on the, especially some of the more veteran players. They let them just, you know, lay low on those games.
Yeah, really funky way to kick off a Major League Baseball, too, because I'm a Reds fan. Of course, that's the first Major League Baseball team created in 1869. They used to always get the first pitch every single year. And, of course, I went to opening day last year.
It's a holiday in Cincinnati.
It's a holiday.
Parade.
It's official holiday. Everyone is off on opening day. Pete Rose, of course, was always part of that. This will be the first year that Pete Rose is not part of that in some 40 years. A lot of people are going to be remembering his life, the best baseball player to ever play, not only in baseball for the Reds, but baseball period. But of course, the 18th and 19th, Tokyo, Chicago, LA, which is going to be funky and weird. And then, of course, you don't play baseball for another 8 days until the regular season starts with LA again on the 27th. So I guess they need some time to get back from LA, but those two games will count in Tokyo. So very interesting. Of course, we're going to have some futures. I know Case has been red hot on Major League Baseball the last couple of years, and I love those futures because you can kind of put those aside, you kind of forget about those, and then halfway through the season, you get to start counting your cash, so it's good stuff. Kai, I know you always have just a ton of different things you're looking at because you're getting it from both sides. You've played both sides. What's sticking out to you this weekend in SEC? Anything that you're looking at particularly that's very interesting to you in college hoops? We get ready for March Madness kicking off here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, let me throw two things at you real quick. They've already announced in that opening Major League Baseball game that the two Japanese pitchers for each team are going to be starting. That's going to be interesting, and I like that. You know, something that we really haven't gotten into here, but talk on NBA. I mean, did anybody see what Steph did yesterday?
Yeah, 56.
We talked a little bit about the trades, but not a lot in the trade deadline. Who would have thought? I mean, Golden State looked dead. Now Jimmy Butler's been brought in, and I think don't get me wrong when I say this. I think he's resurrected Steph Curry's career because Steph is just free to do whatever now, and I think that's huge. That's probably as big as the Luka trade, I think, because I think, you know, now Golden State's up to seventh. They're 7-1 since the trade. The Lakers, I think, are 6-2 since the trade with Luka, and one of the two losses he didn't play. That's going to be huge. People need to look at that moving forward. But jumping back in, you got Mizzou at Vandy this weekend. Not sure what the line's going to be, but that Memorial Magic, you know, who knows? Texas A&M in Florida, like we talked about, Florida just crapped the bed at Georgia. I would think that this is going to be a nice bounce back game for Florida. I really do because of them at home. Texas A&M has been sliding. They've really struggling. Been sliding. I think if I got anything less than 10 in that game, I would hammer Florida. Like I said, I do like Alabama in this situation against Tennessee. I think St. John's, who beat Seton Hall by 27, I think, at Seton Hall, I think that's going to be a 17, 18 point line. And I think they cover that pretty easily. And think about this. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Oklahoma and Ole Miss as bubble teams. And then Oklahoma goes out and loses at home to LSU. And I think they've lost, Ole Miss has lost three straight. Oklahoma's lost four or five, including that home loss. You know, those two teams play this week. That's going to be interesting. Nobody gives a rat's butt about Georgia at Texas because they both suck. Even though Georgia's off a big win, and Texas is off a big loss, so look out there. Like a lot of teams, and like I said, the most overrated team in the country, Kansas, playing at home, they're going to go as far as big guy goes. But I really like the way Texas Tech's been playing lately. They impressed me in their loss to Houston, and I really like that. And I love what Kip said earlier about the Big East. I totally agree. And I think St. John's could sneak in. If they get the correct two seed, they could be a Final Four. I think they are a Final Four team. If they're not in the same bracket with Auburn or Houston, I would have them in my Final Four.
And this year is rough for me, too, because I'm a Xavier Muskie. I went to Xavier, and, of course, right now they're one of the first four teams. When Fremantle came back, I thought, okay, we're good to go, man. I mean, they're going to be fine. They're going to win their 23 ball games. They'll get in. They won't have to win a tournament or even at large bit. But right now, they're just not playing like the Musketeers can. Let's go to Kip. Kip, is this going to be the first time the Auburn Tigers have beaten Kentucky at Rupp since 1988 this weekend?
They have not won a game in this century in Rupp Arena. If that's any kind of frame of reference, that might be a Tony Curry stat, but it's a pretty good one. You know, they have not come away from Lexington with a victory. So I don't expect that. I think they're going to change that trend this time. Kentucky, I love them earlier in the week. They're only 2.5 in their road game this week at Oklahoma, and they only won by a point because good grief. I think the Mark Pope honeymoon's over. I think when they play in Rupp, they're even under more pressure. But I kind of just like to look at one of my ticket apps. It says the lowest price available for every SEC game every week, and it's pretty good gauge on which games the fan bases think are important. The Kentucky Alabama game, or Auburn game, I should say, is like 5 times more expensive than any other game in the SEC. You can check out some games like Missouri Vanderbilt for $30.
Yeah.
You know, it's college basketball is a pretty good bargain, but I do think Auburn will win the game. I don't know what the line's going to be, of course, because that's a great mystery that's not revealed until the last moment.
I just gave it out.
You just gave it out. Yeah. It's up
about five and a half at FanDuel.
Oh, right five now. And a half. That's right. You said four. Yeah. Then I got confused.
Four was my number. My bad. Sorry.
My attention span is bad. I think they cover that number. I think Kentucky's going to play, you know, with all the intensity you can possibly expect. I agree with Kai. I think Florida is going to be in a really bad mood, and it's a bad time for Texas. You know, I give Kai some credit. About 2 weeks ago, when A&M had crept up to the 7th spot in the poll, Kai said, this team doesn't shoot the ball worth a damn. And they haven't made a shot since Kai declared that. So they've really been sliding the wrong way. And you mentioned Ole Miss and Oklahoma, both kind of slip sliding away as well. I think the Georgia Texas game is important because Georgia now has a heartbeat. They had to win one of those games, Auburn or Florida. They got it done despite blowing a 39-13 lead and actually trailing in the last minute. But I think this game is kind of a bubble bursting game. I think the loser of this game puts themselves in real jeopardy of not making the tournament. Where about a week ago, Texas looked like they were in great shape when they beat Kentucky at home. So I think a lot of these games are going to tell us a lot because I think for the committee purposes, as I mentioned, I think these games are more scrutinized than any games in the tournaments in the conferences. So I really like Florida to blow Texas A&M out. Vanderbilt has got their ship righted. I talked last week on the show about I thought they were sliding the wrong direction. They've had a couple of good wins this week. They host Missouri, who I said last week would not win at Arkansas, and they did not after that supremely good performance. That's one of my SEC things. When a team plays like to their utmost and beyond, they almost always come back kind of flat the next game, especially if it's on the road. So that's something to just keep in mind. You kind of just follow the biorhythms and the algorithms or whatever the term is of teams, and you can kind of see when they're going to peak and when they're going to collapse a little. I think Vandy's on a little bit of a roll now. I think they'll beat Missouri this week, so I like that one as well. And Alabama-Tennessee, too close to call for me. Tennessee can really be solid and play great defense. They've had some good wins. They're back on the right trajectory. So that's just a couple of observations on the SEC this week. And I know this might be counter to logic, but Case is a KU graduate from Kansas. I've watched Kansas basketball since he first enrolled there way back when. And this is the kind of game where people say, well, Kansas isn't very good this year, and they've never been in this position where they've really even dropped out of the top 25 after being the number one team. This is the kind of game at Allen Fieldhouse that they'll play like out there of their minds, and they'll upset Texas Tech. So I'm going to give Kansas as my upset special of the week.
Rock shot going to Case. 12.5 was that over under on teams making the tournament. Is that 12.5 a stand put? Of course, going to this weekend, what do you like?
I think so. Yeah, I'm trying really hard because I'm not really biased. I don't care that much not to put on my Kansas hat, but I got to talk about this game now that Kip teed it up. The only bad thing is it wouldn't be an upset special. They're a 3.5-point favorite, which is exactly
that's interesting.
What I made it. I will say Texas Tech, if you're looking to poke holes in Houston, I mean, they got just the absolute best of the draw the last two games. Iowa State and Texas Tech, both about two starters.
Yep.
Texas Tech, Darian Williams and Chance McMillan didn't play against Houston. We don't have news on what's going on with them going into this Kansas game. But if both of them are out again, Kansas will absolutely crush this team. If neither of those guys play, Kansas by double digits. I've watched KU enough to know that. You know, this isn't a great team. It's been very frustrating to watch. I guess a year like this was due, though. I mean, Bill Self has never been lower than a 4 seed the entire time he's been at Kansas. Wow. They're a 7 seed now, in like bracket matrix, which makes me take exception of what Kai said. How are they the most overrated team when they're a 7 seed? I mean, no one thinks they're any good. Everyone's
They were number one at one point this year. That's why.
Yeah. Back to the beginning of the year, I agree with you. Yeah, they were sorely overrated then. Yeah, I do think the injuries loom large here. If those two Texas Tech guys are back, I think it'll be a really close game, a coin flip, more like a pick'em. But if those guys are out, every single year, if you follow Kansas basketball, I don't know what Bill Self does this time of year, but you know, February, middle of the season, they have this big swoon where everyone just panics and says they stink. Now, obviously, this year has been the biggest of all with all the games they've lost. But this just kind of fits with the rhythm of a Kansas season to me. They always stink this poor part of the year. They kind of get it together. They play better in the conference tournament. And then there's buzz on them going into the tournament. I do think it's kind of going to be like that again this year. I think they're probably still talent-wise a Sweet 16 type team. I would not take them to get to the Final Four. But those are injuries I'd really monitor. And if you happen to see either of those Texas Tech guys out, I would not hesitate to fire on Kansas, even though they're a bigger favorite than I think most people would expect this week. I guess the only other game that we've talked about a lot that I might have somewhat opinions on is I'm just a lot more forgiving on Kentucky than you guys. I think I talked about it last week, but I think people just underestimate, like, Lamont Butler, I just think is the most key player on this team.
Different team.
He was out forever. He came back against Oklahoma. They didn't really play great against Oklahoma either. Of course, they did have that buzzer beater. I think Auburn's the best team. I've said it all year. I have them, you know, up and down futures wise, but I'm kind of looking to sell on them here in this final stretch. I think Kai pointed it out, and I totally agree. What's their final three games? I was looking at earlier, was, you know, at Kentucky, at Texas A&M, home Alabama. I'd be pretty surprised if they win all three of these. I don't think I gave it out on this show or even Kip's show, but I'm sitting on a Jani Broome National Player of the Year at 7-1. Cooper Flagg got as high as a -800 favorite like a month ago, and now it has totally flipped. Right now you can get Cooper Flagg at like 2-1. You know, I know what I say, it's always situational if I want to hedge or not. I think this is a big bet I'm going to be making today is Cooper Flagg 2-1. Then I have Flagg and Broome. I think I'll lock in a profit there. Just I don't see Duke tripping up in their final three games. I mean, the terrible ACC, I think they have like Florida State, Wake Forest, and someone. I'm a little worried about Auburn for this stretch, and I think it starts at Kentucky. I mean, 5.5 right now, I said. I think that means there's a good chance by the time these numbers get down in Nevada, it'll be 6. And if I can get Kentucky +6, it sucks to go against Auburn, but I'll probably be on Kentucky this weekend. I think this is a tough end of the season for Auburn. Still think they're a Final Four team, the most likely national champion probably, but this looks like a final tough three games for the Tigers.
Certainly we don't rest players, but listen, I mean, Auburn's so far ahead of everyone else, it doesn't really matter. I'm not saying they would rest any of their players. I'm not saying Broome's not going to play, but just for lack of having any type of injuries over a course of games that really don't mean anything, you'd like to think that maybe they're going to be playing off just a little bit. But then again, that's why these teams are national championship teams, because they don't flip a switch. They just get after it. K4wins.com, the site changes at least once a day, sometimes twice or three times times a day with our plays. K4Wins.com. It's a free site. You'd be there on subscribe. And of course, we're working on bringing you the K4Wins podcast as often as possible. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, we're up by Friday afternoons. Of course, super important for your Saturday platform of games, if you will, your whole platform. So you're good to go throughout the entire weekend. Check out K4Wins.com. K4Wins.com. Guys, thank you so much. I appreciate you, and we'll get up next week.
Enjoyed it, fellas.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.